I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Listen, all you mother...
Politics. Politics. Humor,
humor,
tequila,
tequila,
and an IQ of under 64.
Yeah.
You're listening to Fart Cop Radio,
Radio, Radio, Radio.
Hello, hello, my name is Bart. Welcome to Bart Cop Radio Show 113. Bart Cop Radio heard on the Bart Cop Radio Networks. Bart Cop Radio found on BartCop.com. My name is Bart. I'll be leading the goose hunt today. Look, here comes a bunch now. Oh, that's right. We're liberals. We don't have guns. But anyway, welcome to the show. We got a good one today. We got some fun stuff. We got some serious stuff. We got some stuff make you laugh, some stuff that'll make you cry. Got stuff from white people, stuff from black people, stuff from fascist dogs. Something for everybody. Oh, I got to tell you one thing, though. In this one rant I did on the Iraqi accounting, trust me, I meant well, but there was times when I might have screwed up the millions and the billions. So, as always, don't trust anything you hear me say or see me write on the page because, you know, I try my best, but I make mistakes. So if you hear me say something on the radio show or you see something written on the page, wouldn't hurt to check it out before you call your editor and demand action be taken. Most important thing we need to do is get a shot of Chinako out the way so we can start the big, big show. Once again, jam-packed. We're going to be hitting 78, 79 minutes here. I may have to trunculate something to make it all fit. Wildflowers, baked apples, mongoose. It's got everything. Chinako Anejo. Okay, like I said, we're going to have to reduce the bit rate to make it all fit in. So let's get ready for the big, big, big show.
This is www.bartcop.com.
Our top story tonight, Iraq is in the news again. Go figure. For those details, we'll go to microphone 3. Wait, I'm the only one here, and I just have one microphone. Hope springs in Iraq. Violence is down in large parts of Baghdad. We saw the progress by Mike Pence, a bonehead Republican congressman from Indiana. We have a long way to go in Iraq. There is tough, difficult work ahead. Already, I don't like this guy. Tough, difficult work ahead. It's like, but we're going to have to dig ditches in the heat, and then we're going to have to paint a couple of houses. That's tough work. Well, no, getting shot at, wearing 35 pounds worth of gear, that's not tough work. That's dangerous suicide. That makes no sense, Mike. But we are making progress, and there's reason for cautious optimism about Bush's surge. Well, no, wait. There's reason. Wait, we'll start off. There's optimism, which means nothing. Optimism is a maybe hope. Now they're saying there's room for cautious optimism. So optimism is an idea that maybe something will work. But then we have to have a lot of caution about the optimism. So that's a damper. And now he's saying there's reason for caution. So we're thrice removed from the possibility of something going right. and he's crowing about how good things are. Despite all you see and hear in the media, there's a springtime of hope beginning in Iraq. Springtime for Hitler and Germany. Does that sound like a... that sounds like a... that sounds like a Mel Brooks movie, don't it? Springtime of hope in Baghdad. I saw it on the faces of hundreds of ordinary Iraqis on the streets of Baghdad. Bullshit. You can't look at someone's face and say, I saw hope. Because maybe the guy standing next to you looks at his face and saw goddamn fear because his family's dead now. From the moment of our arrival, I could sense that things were different. See, there's no proof that anything's different. This Mike Pence sensed it. He just had a thing. He could feel it. Because he's sharp about these things. I could sense things were different. General David Petraeus met us at the airport, and instead of boarding helicopters to the Green Zone, we drove into town that I hadn't done this since my first trip several years ago. Why, asshole, don't you know anything? You need to read Barkup.com. Bush gave the Saudis the green light to give Stinger missiles to the Sunnis, and they're shooting our helicopters out of the sky. That's why he didn't take a helicopter from the goddamn airport to the goddamn Green Zone. They're not hardly doing any helicoptering over there anymore. Well, they're doing some, but they're having to fly certain directions at certain times of night and certain angles. This guy, it's a sign of progress. We can't use a helicopter anymore. We were briefed on the progress of the surge into Baghdad. For the first time, U.S. and Iraqi forces have set up dozens of joint security stations throughout the city, which means nothing. You're driving down the street in Baghdad, which I haven't done, and you come across four hand jobs with assault rifles that have blocked the street. Now, you're going to drive up to the four hand jobs with assault rifles that are blocking the street and say, hi, my name's Bart. Check me out. No, because half the time they're going to be bad guys. Doesn't anybody read? Doesn't anybody hear? The bad guys are wearing American uniforms, driving American cars, holding American guns. How are you going to pull up to a checkpoint like that? God damn, I would be. If I joined the military, would I be the smartest guy in the military too? You don't get to pull up to these checkpoints. You just don't do that. I guess if you're with General Petraeus and you've got 100 soldiers and a helicopter, gunships and snipers everywhere and 30 armed vehicles around you, you might. The security forces live at these stations and patrol together for weeks at a time. Oh, that makes me feel better. While the fight is far from over, you mean the one that started in 632? It's 2007. Are we turning a corner on sectarian violence in the Middle East? I'll be goddamn. While the fight is far from over, violence is down in parts of Baghdad. We saw the progress for ourselves. Well, anyone see that CSI where they had roving gangs and they were just monstrously violent? These roving gangs, there'd be like 15 of them. And they just would roam through the bad parts of Vegas. And if you happened upon them, they'd either kill you or, you know, like the 15 of them would just beat you and kick you and maybe shoot you in the head, but just beat their living crap out of anybody they saw. And as time went by, they got hold of Greg, the young, handsome heartthrob who generally works in the lab, but he went in the field this time and he got the living shit kicked out of him. And the makeup man did a great job, but so that would tell us that there's parts of Vegas that are safe. Well, yeah, tell it to Greg. The idea that bad guys are moving around, I think McCain called that whack-a-mole. You don't hear McCain talk about the whack-a-mole theory anymore. Yeah, Bush put 20,000 or 30,000, whatever, soldiers in Baghdad, and now parts of it are safe. Like Bush and the rest of them have been telling us for a long time, the minute we leave, the shit's going to happen. So it follows that if we put an extra 20,000, 30,000 soldiers in Baghdad, it's going to quiet down a little bit while we're there. I'm recording this Thursday. We lost 8 last night, I think 5 the night before, probably 30 for the week. So if we just donate 4 soldiers a day, we can keep the violence in Baghdad down to, what, 600 car bombings a day instead of 1,000? Along with a squad of military security. Oh, I see. So if I'm with P. Diddy and Clinton and Charlie Rangel, I can walk through Harlem at noon and not get assaulted. How about that? Not to pick on my black brothers, I'm just saying. I assume there's still parts of Harlem that a white fellow wouldn't want to walk in by himself. But if I'm with P. Diddy, Bill Clinton, and Charlie Rangel, I'm probably okay. Isn't that proof that there's no more racism in New York? Along with a squad of military security, we spent more than an hour at a bustling... Oh, it was bustling. Here a bustle, there a bustle. It's bustling in Baghdad. The bustling open-air marketplace. While we were instructed to leave our bulletproof vests on, aha! General Petraeus took off his helmet and urged us to leave our helmets in the vehicles. Now, why would he do that? Oh, because the snipers, the American snipers, were on the rooftops and nobody else was going to shoot you from above because it was all American snipers at this open-air marketplace for this, how long was it? More than an hour. So Petraeus got every sniper in fucking Baghdad and he surrounded this open-air marketplace and told the guys, stay there and shoot anything that's not American in the next 90 minutes. So then they come strolling in. Oh, I had a good time. Bought me a hat and a rug. We milled around for more than an hour. See, there's no danger. They milled. I told reporters afterwards, it was just like... I told reporters afterwards, it was just like any open-air market in Indiana in the summertime. I didn't mean that Baghdad was as safe as the Bargersville flea market. I just meant that it was what... Ready? I just meant that that was what it looked and felt like. Oh, once again, his feelings. It felt good. Remember, Pigboy used to tell us about the liberals and their feelings. Well, now Mike Pence has a feeling that everything's fine in Iraq. Well, then, why don't we come home? Lots of people, lots of booths, and a friendly, relaxed atmosphere. The people impacted me the most. I encountered nothing but warmth and friendship. Well, yeah, I think the people at the market were screened, kind of like a Bush speech. As we passed shop after shop, people waved, touched their hearts, and expressed a greeting in Arabic. Many just said, hello. Well, yeah, these people ought to be damn grateful that we showed up. There's only 600,000 dead Iraqis. How dare they not show some gratitude? Later, when I met with Indiana soldiers, one told me, when I go home to R&R, I tell people it's nothing like what you see on TV. There's a lot of good happening over here that never gets reported. And I saw a blurb on Fox News tonight. They're going to have an interview with a car bomb that didn't go off. Be sure to catch that. I think Hannity's got that. Tough and heartbreaking days are ahead. Oh, you think? Listen to this guy. He's got maybe 300-400 words here. 380 of them are how perfect and great it is. But there's 20 words he puts in that says it's not all rosy. But I have hope. I have seen the impact of the surge. Freedom can win in Iraq. Oh, I get it. Freedom can win, kind of like big oil can give us cheaper gas. When we give them $10 billion tax break, big oil can give us cheaper gas. If we give Bill Gates $10 billion, he can hire more people. If we give the super rich in this country $2 trillion extra dollars, they can hire more people. But do they? No. Freedom can win in Iraq if we do not grow weary. Oh, how many years should we not grow weary? And doing the good things that our soldiers and the Iraqi forces are doing with new strategies and new leadership, I thought Bush was still president. Mike Pence is a Republican handjob from Indiana. These are edited excerpts from a blog he wrote after his recent trip to Iraq. Well, wonder what Bush's favorite newspaper, U.S. Whore Today, has to say about Mike Pence. So this is the USA Today rebuttal to Mike Pence's idiocy. For this report, we go to microphone 5. Oh, damn, that's right. I don't have a microphone 5. Headline, in Iraq, McCain and company try to sell the upbeat story. Legislators gush over normal market, but their visit was hardly normal. You're not going to believe the first sentence in this piece. You're not going to believe it. Are you sitting down? You got a joint? You got a little shot of something you can pour yourself? You ready for this? The next 6 months in Iraq are the most important since the war began. You didn't say that. You just didn't. It seems like it's been at least a year, maybe two, that we heard the comedians do jokes about, oh, the next 6 months I'm sure John Stewart did a couple. Oh, the next 6 months, January of 03. Oh, the next 6 months, March of 03. Oh, the next 6 months, July of 03. Oh, the next 6 months, September 03. Oh, the next 6 months, January 04. You know where this is going. So I'm not going to do every 90 days, but they keep saying that. The next 6 months will tell the tale. Well, you know, I'll tell you what's going to tell the tale. The 6 months leading up to the election. And you know what's killed me? Amazingly, the Democrats don't tell me they did it on purpose. Don't tell me that. But they've accidentally done something right here. That bill that Bush is threatening to veto, if they ever send it to him. And by the way, when are you going to serve the goddamn subpoenas? Quit sitting on them. Oh, we've drawn up a subpoena. I wrote a hot letter to my boss, but I didn't mail it. Oh, boy, I'll tell you what, I let him have it in that letter. Well, if you don't mail the son of a bitch, it don't count. Don't draw up a subpoena and put it in Leahy's desk drawer. Serve the sons of bitches. Okay, but back to that bill. The bill calls for the troops to be home by March 08, 6-7 months before the election. And Bush is saying, I'll have none of that. We will have no troops home just before the election. And the Democrats are saying, oh, okay, that's the bill you're going to veto? Don't bring the troops home before the election? Way to go, Mr. President. Your leadership is still intact. We can see their brain is working as well as always. So when we got soldiers dying all through the summer of 08, as he or she is on his way to the White House, we're going to, every day is going to be Iraqi violence, kills 8 more, kills 10 more soldiers, kills 15 more soldiers, another helicopter shot down, another armored vehicle blown to bits, 6 more dead. Those are the kind of headlines we're going to have all through the summer of 08 leading up to the election. And that's the way Bush wants it. And that's the way these idiot, suicidal, lemming Republicans, that's how they want it. By God, we're not bringing the troops home. We're Republicans. Fine. Where's the voting booth? I would like to cast my ballot, please. You know, we don't have to worry about Diebold this time. The election's going to come back 70-30 pretty much no matter what. Anyway, back to the article. The next 6 months. Yeah, right. The Baghdad troop surge is President Bush's last chance to salvage a semblance of success or even a manageable exit. Democrats in Congress don't have the votes to stop the surge, but that will change if the war does not. That is correct. If the Democrats, all they got to do is keep sending the same bill to Bush. Every bill that comes up, they got this idea from me. Every bill they send to Bush should have the bring the troops home thing in it. And then when Bush vetoes it, they can say, whoever the nominee is in October of 08 can say, 7 times Bush has vetoed a bill to end this war. President Bush doesn't care what you think. He doesn't care what black people think. He doesn't care what white people think. He doesn't care what military families think. He wants to keep those soldiers there forever. And if they had any brains, they could say, because he's making $300 million a day stealing Iraqi oil. What does he care? Every week goes by, he makes $2 billion. Him and his cronies make $2 billion a week. So why bring him home early? He's not running for office again. Does Bush give a fuck if he goes down in history as the worst president ever? No. $2 billion a week goes a long way towards satisfying your ego. And what kills me, it'd be a little different if this gang of people in charge was in their 20s. But Cheney's going to be dead in 5 or 10 years anyway. Why does he want to spend the last days of his life going from a billionaire to a multi-billionaire? What's in it for him? What does Cheney's billionaire status do for him that he needs more money? I just don't get it. But other than he's an oil man, an oil man can never, ever have enough money, no matter how many thousands of soldiers die. This helps explain why Americans were treated to a bizarre spectacle last weekend when some of Bush's congressional allies went to Baghdad's largest open-air market, didn't get shot. That is a headline. We went shopping in Baghdad and stayed alive. News at 11. And declared this was evidence the surge might be starting to work. You see? There's a chance. What did that monkey say a while ago? That there's reason for cautious optimism. Gee. In comments that rival some of the war's other signature lines, such as Mission Accomplished and Bring It On, Mike Pence, a retard from Indiana, said that the Baghdad market was just like a normal outdoor market in Indiana in the summertime. If so, visitors to Indiana might want to pack a little heat. Pence, McCain, and their colleagues were wearing bulletproof vests, arrived in a convoy of armored vehicles, were protected by sharpshooters on rooftops, attack helicopters overhead, and 100 heavily armed American troops on the ground. Trust me, there was 100 and something snipers surrounding the entire market on the rooftops over there. Pence and McCain are completely wrong. There are faint signs of progress since the surge began 7 weeks ago. Well, yeah, obviously. My analogy about going to Harlem. If I go to Harlem with 300 cops, there's probably not going to be any crime. Probably won't be any cars stolen on that block with 300 cops standing there. But we can't live in Baghdad forever. I know Bush wants to. Some militia forces have pulled out to avoid contact with U.S. troops. That is obvious. Execution-style killings are down and things have calmed enough that the city's curfew has been shortened by 2 hours. Wrong. The curfew wasn't shortened by 2 hours because things are better. It was shortened by 2 hours because they wanted to send a signal. They could do away with the curfew if they want. Things are so safe, we don't even need a curfew anymore. They could say that. But would that make anything safer, dropping the curfew? But the killings and bombings have continued, and there are signs the worst violence has merely moved elsewhere. Last week, now get this. Last week, a pair of truck bombings killed 152 people in Tal Afar, a city Bush once cited as a model of U.S. clear, hold, and build strategy. Reprisals quickly killed 45 more. So we got 197 people killed in two incidences in the town that Bush said was a model for success. 197 dead people in the safest city in Iraq. Sound like a good place to be? Supporters of the surge say troops have cut down on bombings by putting concrete barriers around markets such as the one Pence and McCain visited, where a bombing killed scores of people in February. The killers are as adaptable as they are vicious. Last week, a suicide bomber walked past barricades into another market and blew himself up, killing more than 60 people. Well, gee, that's fun shopping. From the start, the war has ebbed and flowed. No. Can you point to the American victories in this four-year-old quagmire? There have been times when deaths and attacks fell. It's like the stock market growing under Bush. If you go in and crash the stock market, I saw the other day the Standard & Poor's 18 quarters in a row record streak had been broken. Let me say, what is 18 quarters? That's 4.5 years. Bush has been in office more than 6 years. So what happened? Bush got in, crashed the stock market, and then enjoyed 18 quarters in a row of it trying to get back to even. And they call it a success. Bush calls it a success. The media calls it a success. U.S. fucking whore today calls it a success. Because we've had some progress. We've had some good luck trying to get back to even. And they call that progress. When the attacks fell, it was tempting to conclude that U.S.-led forces had turned the tide, but too often, supposed signs of progress, more cooperation, intelligence for Iraqis, for example, are familiar claims officials have made over and over again almost since the 2003 invasion. Iraq's history, as well as the disturbing facts on the ground, are ample reason to be skeptical that the surge will succeed, but given the price of defeat, there is also compelling reason to hope that it will. It's just too early for judgment. So we've been there 50 months, and it's too early to judge our success. Oh, God. We certainly know that life in Baghdad is nothing like a peaceful summer afternoon in Indiana. Well, no, Mike Pence said it was. It's not entirely like it was there 3 months ago either. Well, yeah, we've gone from 1,100 bombings a day to 600 or 700. What a success story. The relevant question is what it will look like 6 months from now. Well, no, you stupid bastard. 6 months from now, you're going to tell us that the next 6 months are the most important. The next 6 months will tell the tale. And then a year from today, in April 08, you're going to say, oh, the next 6 months are going to tell the tale. Well, no, the tale was told years ago. The tale was told in the year 1000 AD. These sons of bitches aren't ever going to stop fighting each other, and trying to get between them is crazy. If you're at a bar and two drunks stand up and pull knives and start stabbing each other, why are you going to get between those two? That's what we got here. Worse, you got two donkeys with explosive vests on, and the two of them are fighting, and Bush wants to get between them and make them stop. Ain't going to happen. He just wants to steal the oil. Why don't we let Baghdad go to hell and just let Bush steal the oil? Take all the soldiers out of Baghdad. Put all the soldiers on the pipeline and bring the other half home, because you don't need 150,000, 180,000 soldiers guarding the pipeline. You only need 70,000 or 80,000 to guard George Bush's precious pipeline. Maybe we'd only lose 4 a day instead of 8 if we did it that way. Oh,
This is World News with Charles Gibson.
Good evening. We have an exclusive report tonight on efforts to undermine the government of Iran. Efforts undertaken with the knowledge of the U.S. government. Our chief investigative correspondent, Brian Ross, has uncovered a U.S. intelligence connection to a militant group in Pakistan that is conducting raids across that country's border with Iran, raids that in some cases have been deadly. The purpose of those attacks? To destabilize Iran. Brian is here tonight with details. Brian.
Charlie, U.S. and Pakistani intelligence sources tell ABC News that the U.S. has been secretly advising and encouraging a militant group that has carried out a series of guerrilla raids inside Iran, raids that have led to the deaths or capture of Iranian soldiers and officials. The group operates out of the Baluchistan province in Pakistan, just across the border from Iran. The group, made up of Baluchi tribesmen, has produced its own videos showing Iranian soldiers and border guards it says it has captured and brought back to Pakistan.
Since you can't see, I'm going to tell you what's on the screen, and it is creepy as hell. It looks exactly like those Richard Berg, David Berg, what was that fellow's name that they beheaded? You got these guys standing there with the AK-47s across their chest, and they got masks on. And the poor kidnapped Iranian bastard is on his knees in front of them. There's like the hostages on his knees in front of them. And the five of them are standing behind them with all those symbols behind them that nobody can read. It looks exactly like the beheading videos. But this time it's written and produced by the United States. That ought to piss somebody off.
U.S. government sources say the U.S. provides no direct funding of the group.
That means they launder the money through someone like, oh, I don't know, Saudi Arabia? Listen to him. The United States denies any direct funding. Well, that means I handed it to Khalil, and Khalil handed him the money. Well, it's still our money. I pay taxes, you pay taxes. George Bush takes that tax money, and he gives it to these beheading terrorists over there. There's a chance that the whole Middle East is such a hand job that we have to hire beheaders to fight their beheaders, but this is so dirty, and he's doing it with our money in our name, and apparently it's okay with the Democrats. We're hiring beheaders over there.
But since 2005, has maintained close ties to his youthful leader, this man, Abdel Malik Regei, who claims to have personally executed some of the Iranian captives.
You know, it's hard for me to keep this straight because I really do have an IQ of 64, but wasn't that Zarqawi guy, Zarqawi, wasn't he a Sunni? And why are we hiring people like Zarqawi to fight for us over there? Zarqawi was the bad guy like a year ago, and then we killed him, but now we're hiring these other Sunni beheader guys that produce these terror videos, and they execute the Iranians now. Could we be any deeper into this stupid civil war?
He used to fight with the Taliban. He's part drug smuggler, part Taliban, part Sunni activist.
They go across
here.
The border there. Yeah.
Alexei Debov, a senior fellow on counterterrorism at the Nixon Center and an ABC News consultant, says tribal sources told him Regei and his group, called Jandula, are getting money funneled through Iranian exiles who have connections to European and Gulf state countries.
He is essentially commanding a force of several hundred guerrilla fighters that stage attacks across the border into Iran on Iranian military officers, Iranian intelligence officers, kidnapping them, executing them on camera.
Did you hear that? We're funneling money to the people who capture and execute the Iranians on camera. That makes George Bush Zarqawi's twin. How am I wrong on this?
Most recently, Jandula took credit for an attack in February that killed at least 11 members of the Iranian Revolutionary Guards in the city of Zahedan. Last month, Iranian state television broadcast what it said were confessions by those responsible for that bus attack. They reportedly admitted to being members of Jandula and said they had been trained for the mission at a secret location in Pakistan.
This absolutely could not happen without the approval at most senior level of the Pakistani government.
In fact, Pakistani sources say the secret campaign against Iran was on the agenda when Vice President Cheney met with Pakistani President Musharraf in February.
The only relationship with the group that the U.S. intelligence will admit to, for the record, is seeking its help in tracking al-Qaeda figures in that part of Pakistan. Other than that, U.S. officials say only they do not provide direct funding to the group to attack Iran. Charlie.
But Brian, could a small group like this actually have an effect
in destabilizing the Iranian government.
There is a belief by U.S. officials that this minority group plus four or five other minority groups, if stirred up, could in fact destabilize and upset the Tehran central government, leading to a destabilization of that regime.
All right, our chief investigative correspondent, Brian Ross. And Brian will have more of his report later on Nightline.
Well, first of all, I'm real surprised that ABC Horror News would actually broadcast something like this, possibly against the wishes of Karl Rove, or maybe they decided they wanted to put this out there, but we are arming these beheaders over there. And funny how we grabbed the Iranians and forced them to confess on camera, and then the Iranians grabbed the Brits and forced them to confess on camera. It's a big tit for tat. But meantime, Bush is saying, oh, what an outrage. They don't like international law. There's outlaw regimes. Well, gee, you're playing the same game. Saw this on consortiumnews.com. I don't know if Robert Perry said it himself, but Robert Perry published this, that Bush tells this joke about, oh, they say I'm violating international law? Uh-oh, better call my lawyer. Heh heh. That's what we got. When America breaks international law, it's, uh-oh, better call my lawyer. Heh heh. And when someone else does it, it's, oh, what an outrage. What an outrage. They're terrorists outside of the international law community. Oh, harumph, harumph, we can't have this. But we started it. We did it first. It just looks like we have a little slightly better PR department than they do in Iran, but it's the same game. It'd be nice if we could all stop the beheadings, but, you know, the United States is going to have to stop first. We're the invaders. We're not some innocent party here who Saddam attacked and now we've got to retaliate somehow. No, Bush got greedy for that oil and he wants it no matter what it costs. So once again, he's back in bed with the terrorists. If that son of a bitch Lee Hamilton hadn't covered up the original Iran-Contra, maybe America wouldn't have put another Bush bastard back in power to continue doing more murderous business with the terrorists. So ABC has pulled the cover off this story. What we need is an expert that can tell you exactly what happened and give you a little more detail. That expert would be Randy Rhodes. This part is about 6-7 minutes long. I ordinarily don't steal that big a segment from Randy Rhodes or Mike Malloy, but this is damn important, and I can't explain it. It's way over my head, but Randy explains it perfectly. Check this out.
But I'm pretty sure it was a hostage swap because, you know, I didn't want to talk about this while hostages were being held because God knows I didn't want to say anything that might cause them not to be released. It's the facts, people. It's the facts. It's the facts. In The Independent, a UK newspaper, just, yesterday, there was an article about the botched U.S. raid that led to Iran taking British hostages. And apparently what the United States did, and this is noteworthy because this is probably the only secret war Bush has ever started that came to a good conclusion. But I think that's because Bush had nothing to do with the conclusion. Just a feeling. More than a feeling. It's the facts. See, here's what happened. We had this little failed American attempt to abduct two senior Iranian security officers who were in Iraq on an official trip, an official out in the open meeting to northern Iraq. So, let's see. They were invited by the sovereign Iraqi government to discuss bilateral border security. And the United States said, hell, let's seize them. Seize them. Seize them. I'm melting, I think was what Bush said right after that. But they seized these guys who were meeting in the open with the sovereign Iraqi government to talk about bilateral border security. Things Iraq could do, things Iran could do to bring border security. Now, we went in there and, you know, if it was anybody but us, I would have to call it kidnapping. But, of course, it's the great United States. We don't do stuff like, oh, we do. Well, we kidnapped them. We literally kidnapped these five Iranian officials. And, by the way, nobody has seen them since. But we didn't get the guys we wanted. So this all happened on January 11th, see. And then sometime in February, we did it again. Because we didn't get the guy we wanted. We were looking for a guy named Jafari, and we settled for a guy named Jalal Sharafi. Is there something wrong with us? See, this is what happens when you purge the military of all gay Arabic speakers, okay? You go after a Jafari, and you want to kidnap him, and you end up with a Jalal Sharafiri, you know, because lost in translation, apparently. So we literally, and you know what the equation is here, and the Brits agreed that us trying to and succeeding in kidnapping five Iranian officials who were there at the invitation of the sovereign Iraqi government is the same as if the Iranian or the Iraqis try to kidnap the head of the CIA, or in the British press they said MI6, while they were on an official visit to a country neighboring Iran, such as Pakistan or Afghanistan. That's what they equated it to. And these were the Brits who had the hostages held. They were saying, look, the Americans freaking started this. They screwed up a kidnapping with people who were publicly meeting, openly invited, and openly meeting with the sovereign Iraqi government. What the hell are they doing? So we released Mr. Jalal Sharafi, who we really thought was Jafari, say, and mistakenly kidnapped him because we have no gay Arabic translators. The only gays in the military are the British sailors, who, by the way, confessed, like immediately, to being in Iranian waters. They confessed. And they were put on TV confessing. Now, that's against Geneva Conventions to put hostages on the TV confessing. But what was America going to say? After we violated Geneva 8 ways to Sunday, you did it wrong. I mean, what were we going to say? The Iranians violated the Geneva Conventions by putting British sailors on the TV? You did it wrong. That's all we could say, because this is the world in which we live in. That's what things have come to under this president, George W. Bush. We don't even have the moral high ground in a hostage situation. Oh, dear God. Which we caused. Because we are having a secret war with Iran, whether you like it or not, whether you know it or not, we are. We are literally having a secret war with Iran. We now know that we kidnapped Iranian officials who were openly meeting in Iran, went back and did another kidnapping because we got the wrong guys, haven't seen the original five guys since we kidnapped them, but the high-ranking guy was released, and they swapped them for the 15 British prisoners. That's what happened here. It's amazing to me. It's just stunning to me that we would have a secret. It's like Iran didn't take the bait. Ah, damn. Well, let's kidnap another guy. All right, we have to give that one back. All right, we'll give him back. Yes, we have to give him back because Tony Blair is having a cow. I just saw them on the TV right before the release. They were wearing very bad suits. And, you know, we all know that British sailors are gay and they would never dress that way. So I'm guessing this is what they gave them to wear. But truthfully, they were giving each other noogies. And I'm thinking that this is the way Iran gets you to confess on the TV, is the great noogie torture method. I think that we should render all of our Gitmo prisoners to Iran for the great noogie torture, because apparently Iran can get you to confess in, like, seconds. In seconds they were on the TV confessing. Yeah, we were in Iranian waters. Yeah, they were. And I don't even know why they would confess. You know, you think about it. If there's no torture involved, and there was no torture involved, if you think that there was no torture involved, then ask, just riddle yourself this, Batman. They were on a little frigate. They were on a little rafty thing. And they said that their job that day, their orders that day, were to go and inspect a ship that had come into Iraqi waters. That's the story that the soldiers gave before they confessed to going into Iranian waters to board a ship. Okay. So they were on one of these little tube things, you know, like a little rafty thing, right? So they came from the mothership. Now, what was the mothership doing when their sailors got captured? Where was their air cover? Where was the call? Oh, my God, they're kidnapping our soldiers. They're kidnapping our soldiers. Oh, my God, they're kidnapping us. You know, what happened to that call? Why was there no air cover when they were kidnapped? That's number one. And number two, were they given orders to do this mission in order to make an attempt at Iran taking the bait and shooting at them, or taking them? And were they told, if you are captured by Iranians, which you will be once you enter Iranian waters, just tell them anything they want to hear. Just don't worry about it. Just tell them that, you know you're in Iranian waters. Don't hide anything. Don't cover for us. Tell them what your orders were, and that your orders were to go into Iranian waters to see if they would capture you. I mean, Why would somebody give orders like that if it wasn't to see if Iran would take the bait and take the soldiers or the sailors? Do you know what I mean? The whole thing reeks. It reeks to high heaven. It reeks of baiting Iran. And, you know, when you combine it with the other stories about conducting war games right off the coast of Iran, and now we find out that there's a secret war that's been going on against Iran by a group out of Pakistan called Jandula. I feel weird saying it. Jandula. Jandula. It just feels weird saying it. But that's what they're called. They're Pakistanis who used to be Taliban fighters. Their leader is a former Taliban fighter and a drug smuggler who is a Sunni activist. And they're funneling money through Iranian exiles in Europe and the Gulf states, like Saudi Arabia comes screaming to mind, from the United States to them so that they can operate kidnapping operations and executions against Iranian officials. One such Iranian official who was executed by this group that is supported clandestinely by America literally executed a guy and put it on the TV. And when the Iranian TV showed it, they had the CIA logo inserted into the broadcast. Now, of course, the CIA denies that they're supporting terrorists who are executing Iranian officials, but it was on the agenda when Cheney met Musharraf in February.
What about the presidential race? And
oh, my God. You know about that?
Well, I've heard about it.
I love it. I mean, it's Madam President. Get used to it.
Oh, you think Hillary Clinton?
Oh, I said it when she didn't even know it.
Really?
She will run, she will win, and she will be president for the third time. Madam President. Mm. And it's a great thing. Now, I know that they have this black man running. That's a big deal. You know, Lubumba, Labamba, Kunta Kinte, whatever his name is.
Barack Obama.
Oh, yeah, Barack Obama, whatever. Whatever. Whatever's fair. He's too black. He's too white. He's not black. He's half. I mean, they're going real crazy. He's an American, and that's good, but he doesn't have a chance. He doesn't.
Really?
No, nothing against him personal. He's too skinny. He's too thin. No, we don't like thin presidents.
Is
we don't.
Right?
Go in the history of us with thin presidents. We don't like them. Hmm. We'll shoot them. We don't like them thin. Here is my fantasy.
Yeah.
Okay? We all have them. My fantasy is I want Hillary to run with him.
Oh.
On the same ticket. Uh-huh. I want him to be the vice president because that would assure the president won't be assassinated.
It's such a crazy world now. What else has caught your attention lately in the news?
Bush. When I see Bush, he's unbelievable to me. I can't get ready for him. Or his little black girlfriend. I can't get ready for him.
Secretary of State.
See the audience? Ooh. The question for the evening is, does Bush eat rice? Oh.
That's incredible. That's insane. That is insane.
Wow.
Yeah, Chinese. Chinese.
Does rice eat Bush?
Yeah.
Hey, that's what
we're gonna.
That's what Felicia.
We're gonna lose our liquor license.
It wasn't me.
Now, in this next bit, Bill Maher is going to say something that's true. And this other guy's name is David Frum. Now, there's a Democratic David Frum, and I don't know if it's F-R-O-M, F-R-U-M, don't care. But I thought this was going to be the Democratic David Frum, but no, this is the Republican American Enterprise prostitute David Frum, and he's going to tell the truth about something. And it's real wacky when a Republican tells the truth. Then when it's over, well, check this out, and I'll come back.
But wait a second, Ronald Reagan did one great thing. When we were in Lebanon and we got the Marines all blown up, he cut and run. And he said, you know what? These people are crazy. Let's get the fuck out of here.
Okay, David's a part of the problem.
And Bin Laden cites that. When Bin Laden was citing his evidence for the weakness of will of the United States, he cited that.
Right, and Bin Laden never would have attacked us if we weren't in Saudi Arabia.
Now that's the truth. You know it, I know it. Bob Dole knows it. The American people know it. Everybody knows it. That's the truth. But what the Republicans did when they figured out that that was one of the 15 or 20 giant, giant mistakes that Reagan made. See, Republicans, they rally around their heroes. Democrats stab theirs in the back, but Republicans rally around theirs. So they got together and they concocted this bullshit story that the reason Osama attacked America is because he knew we would cut and run because of Clinton and Somalia. But that's not true. That's not true at all. If you look at your timeline, they bombed the World Trade Center the first time before anything happened in Somalia. But the Republicans can't stand for the truth to come out. So the RNC or Rush Limbaugh or Hannity, O'Reilly, somebody wrote this facts down about, hey, anytime you hear about this cut and run bullshit, go right to Clinton in Somalia and we're going to patch over this whole Reagan thing. We're going to pretend that Reagan thing never happened. So every time it comes up now, and this has gone on for years and years and years. Whenever the cut and run comes up, they always talk about Somalia. But no, Somalia wasn't Clinton's deal. Poppy Bush sent those troops over there. Clinton didn't want to have any part of it. And when Black Hawk Down happened, he said, hey, fuck it, bring them home. That was the right thing to do. George Bush had no business sending a bunch of soldiers into Somalia, which was an Al-Qaeda stronghold before you and I knew what Al-Qaeda was. Now, Bush was director of the CIA previous to this. He's supposed to know a little something about terrorism, about world affairs, and you goddamn should know something about a country before you send a bunch of American troops in there without armor. When the shit hit the fan, Clinton said, hey, fuck it, this is not my war, this is not my idea, I didn't have anything to do with this, bring them home, let's close out this operation. But they can't stand for the Reagan truth to come out, so they concocted this whole Somalia Black Hawk Down thing is why the terrorists got so emboldened, but it's just not true. And it's amazing to hear a Republican, this David Frum, didn't get the facts. Somehow he wasn't privy to the information. You're not supposed to tell the truth about this. You're supposed to lie and blame it all on Clinton and Somalia, but it's not true. Reagan got 220 or 218, whatever it was, Marines killed in one day. His joint chiefs told him this. We don't want to put those soldiers on land. We want them housed on ships because you can't fly a pickup truck over 5 miles of water and hit a battleship or a carrier or something. So let's put the troops on the ship. Reagan said, no, I want them on land. I want to be symbolic. I want to be cute. I want to be clever. Reagan overrode the wishes of his joint chiefs just like the monkey's doing right now. He said, no, you don't know anything about military. I know more than you because I'm Reagan or whoever was pulling Reagan's strings at the time. But that's what we got. That's what the truth is. And go figure, you got to get this from a comedy show. You can't get this from the Democrats, can't get this from the media. Got to get this on a comedy show. Well, a comedy show on some drunken tequila treehouse. Why should the important stuff come from the comedy sector of the world? Why can't the important stuff either come from the Democrats or the media? And that pisses me off. Oh, and one more thing, that last sentence that Bill Maher got in there about Bin Laden would never attack us if we hadn't put troops in Saudi Arabia. Nobody knows that. I mean, if you read Barkop.com, if you listen to Randy Rhodes, if you listen to Bill Maher, you might. But nobody knows that. I'll bet 95%. Remember, this is the idiot country where 70% of the people said Saddam attacked us on 9/11. Nobody knows the truth. Mostly because the Democrats and the media refuse to tell it. But I'm glad Bill Maher got that little shot in. We're in the big trouble now because Bush wanted to steal that oil. And the whole problem with Osama and Al-Qaeda and 9/11 came because April Gillespie told Saddam that it was okay for him to invade Kuwait. And as soon as he did that, Poppy Bush ran to the Saudis and said, look, he's coming for you too. We got fake evidence here. Look, he's massing on the border. He's going to launch into Saudi Arabia any day. You better let us build a base here so we can protect you because here he comes. That's what pissed bin Laden off. That's what happened to the World Trade Center. That's how we're in this Third World War. And it's all because of the father-son Bush bastards that people don't want to hear the truth about. You know, some of us have been telling the truth about the son of a bitch for 7-8 years. Now, after all this time, after 3,500 dead, after all this, after 4 years of war that's never going to end, now the media starts acting like, oh, George Bush, is he not perfect?
It's a hard pill to swallow when the laws you follow are enforced on land your ancestors were wrongfully mounted on. And the very principles this country's founded on can't be counted on in time of crisis and confusion. What an illusion they've pulled off on us, misused and lost our trust too many times. But ain't too many rhymes been written about this, so I'm pissed, because for some odd reason we feel like it's better that less is said, but for God's sakes, niggas, they left us for dead, dying. And there's no denying them fathers crying with their family's sidewalk written. What was so cleverly hidden is now in plain vision for all to see. We want y'all to see how this country does its poor and downtrodden. This is an instance that must not be forgotten. This for keeps. Long after the media sweeps, political name calling and lying, cinematography then desensitized the eyes so we don't cry no more when we see people dying in despair. We don't care. We just changed the station. We live in a nation where the poor have nothing but time to spend, so we left waiting, tailgating floodwaters outside the Superdome. Home no more, showing no more love than some of them third world countries we take over. This the real rape over. And this ain't young boy frustrated emotion. This is grown man rationale. Hard to admit my nationale don't give a fuck about its own, but the evidence is clear. We could stack it up. Kanye made a statement. Ice here to back it up. It's true. We live in a beautiful world, but ugly souls push the buttons. The gluttons of society. Top priority, making sure the rich folk stay rich folk, pitch folk type thinking. New Orleans been sinking, this ain't a new issue. The Ninth Ward been the tissue that the city wipes his ass with. Like in the past with the first flood, way before Bush contracted Halliburton to restore back the order, they used dead black bodies to try and hold back the water. Such disorder in a country that burns so much money. I'm telling you, you learn so much money when you just open up a book and look inside. That's where they hide the evidence. These fucked up presidents and their constituents pitch you against your own mind here. Fuck up your mind here, yeah. They got opportunities and jobs for the poor. It's called prison life and warfare, nigga. That's your share of the American pie. But you got to lie, steal, and cheat to get it. Step on somebody's feet to get it. And our toes have been swollen for so long. They do us so wrong, but we just stand there and take it. Nature rips the mask off, so now they can't fake it. We stand here butt naked, nigga. This is your nation's poor. But you still turn around and ask us for our kids for war. And them battalions from the bayou that don't know what they over there fighting for, what the fuck can you possibly say to them? When they learn their parents died, casualties of the war on poverty, waiting for help outside a fucking stadium.
Give it up for Black Ice, y'all.
This next bit is about Iran again. Drives me nuts. Should drive you nuts. Might drive you to drink. Big headline, Iraq accounting is still a muddle. Contract fails to produce system to detect fraud. Oh, well, that's unbelievable. You mean that after all these billions that are lost, stolen, or missing, we put into practice an accounting system to find out where it went, and the accounting system failed? Well, I'll be darned. What are the odds that all these missing billions would be lost forever with no idea who got them? Gee, I wonder if they might be friends of Bush's. All right, here we go. A newly formed consulting firm hired to account for more than $7 billion in Iraq reconstruction money did not deliver a database that could help investigators track waste and fraud, a recent report found. The result, 2 years after uncovering one major fraud case, authorities still haven't determined whether there was more graft in the spending of Iraqi oil proceeds. Oh, are you trying to tell me that the bookkeeping on the Iraqi oil proceeds isn't accurate? I didn't know! In April 2005, Stuart Bowen, the Special Inspector General for Iraq Reconstruction, recommended creating a database to help review U.S. spending throughout Iraq. The recommendation followed the discovery of $8.6 billion bid rigging scheme in South Central Iraq. Well, gee, I wonder which President Bush got that ball rolling. $8.6 billion bid rigging scheme. What was Iraq's cut? What was Bush's cut? What was Halliburton's cut? What was Cheney's cut? What was the Kuwaitis' cut? Remember, the Kuwaitis are the people receiving all the oil and shipping it out to all different parts of the world. Before Bush's term ends, he's got to collect the money from the Kuwaitis. How does a country like Kuwait pay the BFEE the trillions that they owe them? They can't just write them a cashier's check. Well, I guess if they do, Bush could cash it in Uruguay or Paraguay or wherever they're going. But isn't that weird that the country of Kuwait is going to owe the Bush crime family hundreds of billions upon hundreds of billions of dollars? And how are they going to pay them? They're just going to hand over Manhattan to them? Okay. 5 months later, a U.S. contracting office in Baghdad hired Reviewer Management International, RMI, of New York. That means they're friends of Bush's, to create a database that would link Iraq contracts with the officials who authorized them. RMI, however, wasn't given adequate instructions until near the end of its $1.5 million contract, and as a result, didn't deliver a usable database, the Inspector General's office found in a follow-up report released January 29th. So we've got missing billions, so let's give a friend of Bush's $1.5 million and ask him to tell us where it went. Years go by, and he says, whoops, my bad. It got away from me. Oh, darn. Now it's gone forever. Kind of like Iran-Contra. Kind of like Bush's AWOL service records. Kind of like every fucking thing they've done. When it came time to look at the evidence, I said, oh, hold on, I got a guy who's real good at that. And the Democrats say, oh, okay, whatever you think, George. And then 2 years later, they say, oh, hey, how about that report on the missing billions? And they say, oh, my bad. I lost it all. I dropped the ball. My computer crashed. That's where your $8.6 billion went. Employees in the Baghdad construction office took on the project, completed the work, and turned over the results to the Iraqi government in December. Iraqi government is Bush. Bowen promised Congress that his office will investigate further. Well, sure, maybe another $1.5 million. Would that help you look for the missing billions? Sons of bitches. Air Force Colonel Lee Mazur of the Joint Contracting Command-Iraq said Bowen's report was accurate. He said RMI got a sole-source contract. Must be one of them no-bid friend of Bush's contracts. Bush calls his buddy, hey, dude, I need some billions to go just disappeared. Can you handle it for me? Yeah, it'll cost $500,000. Throw me $1 million on top of that. I'll say it was my fault. Oh, okay. Such contracts are awarded without competitive bidding because only one company is considered qualified to do the work quickly enough. Sons of bitches. Our $8 billion is missing. There's only one company that can figure out how to do this. And that would be the RMI company, the Friends of Bush's. And, they're bad. They lost it all and failed to create a database to where we could check things. Oh, well, shit happens. Meanwhile, didn't we see Clinton talking to a blonde woman? Let's call ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox News, CNN, Reuters, UPI, AP. Let's get them all on this story. This is important. Clinton was talking to a blonde at a restaurant. This $8.6 billion is missing? That's nothing. Clinton was talking to a blonde. I hear she had big titties. You hear that, networks? She had big titties. That's important. Get on that. We only have 3,500 dead. Only have 2 trillion missing. Only have a world war. Sunnis against Shias with everybody involved. Pick a side. Say a prayer. Mazur cannot comment on the firm's qualifications because he was unable to find, swear to God, a copy of its proposal. $8.6 billion is missing, so we hire Huey, Dewey, and Louie to look for it. and they subcontracted out to the Keystone Cops, and they subcontracted out to the Three Fucking Stooges, and they subcontracted out to RMI, and he was unable to comment on the firm's qualifications because he was unable to find a copy of its proposal. Ain't that a bitch? If the copy of that proposal had been posted on BartCop.com, it'd be a click away, but no. There's only $8.6 billion involved. No reason to keep a copy. It's okay with the Democrats. It's okay with the press. It's okay with everybody. Only $8.6 billion that Bush stole just on this one deal. Robert Raggio, RMI's chairman and sole officer. There's one guy in charge of this. There's only one consulting firm on the planet that can take care of this. And it's Bobby Raggio, probably a frat brother of Bush's from Yale. The only guy on the planet that can find the missing money is this RMI, whose chairman and sole officer, Robert Raggio, did not respond to repeated telephone email messages seeking comment. No, he's busy with other $8.6 billion that are missing. And we just put up with it. We just take it. We can't get Walter Reed fixed because there's not enough money. But we threw $8.6 billion down some rat hole and asked Bobby Raggio to go find it. And he said, oops, I dropped my copy. Can't comment. The UN gave the U.S.-led provisional Iraqi government control over the country's oil proceeds. Oh, really? Well, see, the U.S.-led provisional Iraqi government, that's George Bush, the UN gave him control over the country's oil proceeds. Oh, really? I didn't know. George Bush is in charge of all of Iraq's oil money legally. How about that? And it's missing, and there's no meters on the wells. How about that? What are the odds? U.S. agencies oversaw reconstruction projects using more than $7.3 billion of DFI money through the middle of 2006. In addition, Bowen's offices found U.S. officials transferred $8.8 billion in oil proceeds to interim Iraqi ministries without keeping track of the money. Real life, real world translation, $8.8 billion is stolen by Bush. It's pretty fucking obvious, isn't it? Mismanagement of Iraqi money has angered some Democrats in Congress. Oh, I'll bet they wrote a hot letter. I wonder if they mailed the son of a bitch. Who say it may have increased costs in the United States, which spent $38 billion taxpayer money on reconstruction. You can't even keep up with it. They're stealing. You know, if you're a black guy, you steal a ham for your kids for Christmas, you go to prison for 20 years. If you're George W. Bush, and first you steal $8.6 billion, and then you steal $7.3 billion, and then you steal $8.8 billion, and then you spend another, and then you steal another $38 billion of taxpayer money. Well, accounting happens, and I didn't get my copy, and Bobby Raggio is not answering the phone. So what do you expect, America? If this administration can't accomplish these reconstruction goals with Iraqi money, how can they be trusted to be good stewards over American taxpayer dollars, asked Representative William Lacey Clay, Democrat Missouri, at a House Oversight Committee hearing in February. Never heard of the guy. Never heard him ask the question in February. Nobody cares. But I'm pretty sure Bill Clinton was seen with a blonde with big titties. And that's all that counts in this Koresh forsaken country.
There's a war going on, and the world's about to die. Safe at home. There's a war going on, and your world's about feeling now. No, it ain't about the same. I know your mama and your daddy didn't tell you a thing about the price. And the world, she's so deep, Lord, she's deep in shame. In the world, that's for sure. Everybody wants a more. No one gonna do what's right.
And I haven't had a bad day since. And go back to November 30th, 1950. Tell us where you were and what happened, and the promise, the pledge you made to the Almighty.
We got to Korea. We were the first United States forces there.
to repel the North Koreans after they had in June of 1950 forced the North Koreans all the way down to the end of the peninsula. We went up, and with MacArthur Landing, we pushed the North Korean to the border of North Korea and China. And then one of the cruelest things happened, and that is our intelligence, for what it was, did not tell us that our complete Eighth Army was surrounded by the People's Volunteer Army. They actually crossed the river and surrounded us. My outfit had close to 90% casualties. For 3 days, they blew the bugles. It was sub-degree freezing weather. I saw officers actually leaving by helicopter. We were scared as hell. We didn't know what was going to go on.
You were in the 2nd Infantry, a black division.
No, it was a white division. I was in a black outfit. You know, they talk about integration.
A black outfit within the division.
Exactly.
With white officers.
Exactly. And some of the white officers had left us, had abandoned us, really. And so the Chinese would have the loudspeakers and say, what are you Negroes doing there? You can't even go to the pools in sunny Florida. This is a civil war. You shouldn't be here. And we were all scared. Well, finally, they hit, and I was thrown off of a ammunition tractor into the air. All I saw was a ball of orange fire, and I ended up in a ditch, and I could hear the bugles blowing. I could see my comrades being led away with their hands over their head. At one point, I wanted to play dead, but I thought that the loudness of my heart could be heard by those that was around me, that I was so scared. But anyway, I had been an altar boy, and I knew prayers in Latin as well as in English, and I knew I was going to die, but I just gave it one shot, and I said, Jesus, if you ever get me out of this, if you could just consider sparing me, you're not going to have any problems with Charlie Rangel ever, 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 ever. And I think so many people have had bad experiences that once they get out of it, they forget it. Something clicked, Tim, that I've never forgotten it. And I haven't had a bad day since. No matter what has happened, something automatically says, or I imagine that Jesus says, is that you, Rangel, complaining? I said, no, it must be Tim or someone around me, but I'm okay. And I've always been okay. Some people have said, how could you say that? You lost your brother, you lost your mother, and that wasn't a bad day? I said, it's really strange because first I cursed the darkness, and then I say, how many people have enjoyed having a beautiful mother for 94 years?
How does a black American in the 50s, who goes and fights a war and comes home and doesn't have the full civil rights that our country stands for, how do you deal with that?
With great difficulty, because the Army pumps you up. Those sergeant stripes, those medals, the self-esteem you have for yourself. And when you get out here, they didn't miss you, they didn't know where you were, they didn't know where Korea was. And I had so much ego that I was giving general education development tests, high school tests to people. I forgot completely that I had not graduated from high school. But when I got out, I learned fast.
You were on 6th and 36th Street with a push cart.
That's where I'd started before I went in the Army.
And that fell over on a rainy day, and you said, this is not right.
The cops cussed me out. Staff Sergeant Rangel was being cussed out. I just marched to the VA and said, you got to do better than this.
I deserve better than this.
That's right.
And you finished school, and you went to St. John's University, and then on to St. John's Law School.
No, I went to NYU.
NYU, and then to the New York State Assembly and the Congress, and now you're chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee.
And I haven't had a bad day since. Yeah, 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 yeah.
All right, new rule, Iran and Tom Cruise must swap hostages. Those 15 British sailors for Katie Holmes and her space baby. It's a Shiite Scientologist match made in heaven. The Iranians get something they've always wanted, the chick from Dawson's Creek, And Tom gets something he's always wanted, 15 British sailors. New rule, no more ski slope weddings. Let's remember what a ski slope wedding or a skydiving wedding or an underwater wedding really says. My love for you is so strong, it doesn't warrant a day off from my hobby. On second thought, what a better way to celebrate marriage, heading downhill and feeling frigid. New rule, if you have to eat crap, at least eat humane crap. This week, Burger King announced that it would begin buying eggs and pork from suppliers that don't keep animals in cages, which is such a rare act of corporate responsibility, I'm waiting for them to say April Fools. Hey, you keep this up and I'll put one of your crowns on, Burger King. And now it won't be because it's 3 a.m, you're the only place open, and I'm high. Not to be outdone, Taco Bell says they're going to start being nicer to their rats. New rule, put your shirt on. Posing with your shirt off on the cover of your hip-hop album doesn't say gangsta. It says, I'll blow you for some crack. And finally, new rule, stop pretending your drugs are morally superior to my drugs because you get yours at a store. This week, they released the autopsy report on Anna Nicole Smith, and the cause of death was what I always thought it was. She had 9 different prescription drugs in her, which in the medical field is known as the full Limbaugh. They opened her up and a Walgreens jumped out. Antidepressants, anti-anxiety pills, sleeping pills, sedatives, Valium, methadone. This woman was killed by her doctor, who is a glorified bartender. And I'm not gonna say his name, but only because A, I don't wanna get sued, and B, my back is killing me. Now, this month marks the 35th anniversary of a famous government report. I was 16 in 1972, and I remember how excited we were when Nixon's much ballyhooed National Commission on Drug Abuse came out and said pot should be legalized. It was a moment of great hope for common sense. And then, just like Bush did last year with the Iraq Study Group, Nixon took the report and threw it in the garbage. When are we gonna get it that America's most dangerous drugs are the legal ones in our medicine cabinets, while some of the most benign ones are growing under a heat lamp in my dressing room? I joke. I joke, of course. But 40% of the U.S. population has tried pot. That's 94 million Americans. Or as I call them, my base. Are we all criminals? No, we're not. But it is criminal when a certain person borrows and doesn't return another person's diamond-encrusted bong, Woody. Now, this week in The American Scientist, a magazine George Bush wouldn't read if he got food poisoning in Mexico, and it was the only thing he could reach from the toilet. Described a study done in England that measured the lethality of various drugs and found tobacco and alcohol far worse than pot, LSD, or ecstasy, which pretty much mirrors my own experiments in this same area. The Beatles took LSD and wrote Sgt. Pepper. Anna Nicole Smith took legal drugs and couldn't remember the number for 911. In conclusion, I wish I had more time to go into the fact that the drug war has always been about keeping black men from voting by finding out what they're addicted to and making it illegal. It's a miracle our government hasn't outlawed fat white women. But it's about 8:55 here in California, and it's almost time for me to take my medicine. I leave with one request. Would someone please just make a bumper sticker that says, I'm a stoner and I vote. Awesome.
Well, there you had it. Show 113 in the can. Hope you like parts of it. I know I cried twice. Appreciate you people out there. Appreciate you listeners. Appreciate you subscribers. Appreciate all the efforts from Tom and Tally. And if you get the feel, and if you just have some cocaine deal set up, and the deal didn't work, and you still get the money in your hot little hand, hey, send it to Bart. I can put it to good use. And I won't buy cocaine with it. Won't even buy Chinaco with it. So thanks for listening. I'm getting to work on show 114 right now. This is Bart and K-Drag. I am gone.
Shut up!